All right, so let's jump into a case today that should make any lawyer kind of cringe.
Yeah.
Maybe even sweat a little bit. Ever heard of a Feingold v. Puccello?
Oh, yeah.
It's a story from like way back 1987. But the lessons I think are pretty timeless. We're talking
Yeah.
assumptions, ethics, and a whole lot of what were they thinking
Yeah.
moments.
Yeah. What makes this case so interesting is that it starts like a classic Good Samaritan story,
Okay.
but takes a very sharp turn into legal nightmare territory.
Oh boy.
We've got Barry Puccello. He has the misfortune of getting into a car accident. This was back in 79.
Okay.
And a coworker recommends that he get in touch with this attorney, Alan Feingold. And from the get-go, Feingold seems like he's going above and beyond.
Okay, I'm already sensing a butt coming here.
Yeah.
What's the catch?
The catch is that Feingold, without any formal agreement, any discussion of fees, any signed contract whatsoever, just starts working on the case immediately. He visits the accident scene, taking pictures, interviewing witnesses, even goes as far as getting the other driver to admit fault.
Wow, so he's really hitting the ground running. I can see how Puccello's thinking, hey, this guy's a lifesaver. He's doing all this, and we haven't even talked money.
Right.
But something tells me that initial enthusiasm is about to evaporate.
Yeah, you're spot on. So weeks go by, and finally, Feingold sends Puccello a formal contract.
Uh-oh.
And this is where things get really interesting. The contract includes a 50% contingency fee.
Wait, hold on, 50%.
50%.
That's a lot. I mean, even for a lawyer, that's a pretty hefty chunk. So Puccello understandably says thanks but no thanks and hires someone else.
Yep.
But that's not the end of the story, is it?
No, not by a long shot. Feingold, he doesn't just walk away.
Oh boy.
He decides to sue Puccello for the work he already did,
What?
arguing that he deserves to be compensated, even though there was no written agreement.
Wow.
And this is where we get into what's called, it's a legal principle called quantum merit.
Okay, I've heard that term thrown around before, but I'll admit I'm a bit fuzzy on the details.
Okay, sure.
Can you break it down for us in plain English?
Of course. Quantum merit, it's a Latin phrase, essentially means as much as he deserves.
Okay.
And it's a legal doctrine that allows someone to recover payment for services rendered, even if there's no contract.
Okay.
It's all about preventing what's called unjust enrichment, meaning, someone benefiting from another person's work without paying for it.
So in this case, Feingold is arguing that he put in all this effort,
Yeah.
Puccello benefited from it,
Right.
and therefore it would be unjust for Puccello to just walk away without paying him a dime.
Exactly.
Makes sense on a basic level, but I'm guessing the court wasn't so easily swayed.
You're right to be skeptical. So while quantum merit can be a valid legal argument, it's not a slam dunk.
Right.
Especially in a case like this, where there are so many other factors at play, the court had to weigh Feingold's efforts against, well, the lack of a formal agreement, Puccello's very clear rejection of the proposed fee, and most importantly, the ethical rules that govern lawyer conduct.
I am hooked.
Okay.
Let's get into the nitty-gritty of the court's decision. How they applied these legal and ethical principles to the case.
Okay.
So, did they buy Feingold's whole quantum merit defense?
They most certainly did not. In fact, they ruled against Feingold at every stage, from the initial arbitration all the way up to the Pennsylvania Superior Court.
Wow, sounds like they shut him down hard. What were the main reasons for siding with Puccello?
Well, the court found that Feingold's actions, they violated some key ethical rules that are crucial for maintaining fairness and transparency in these lawyer-client relationships. Specifically, they pointed to Pennsylvania's Rules of Professional Conduct, or PARCP for short.
Okay, let's pause there for a second. You know, I know all lawyers are familiar with the rules of professional conduct, but for our listeners who may not be as well versed, could you give us a quick rundown of what those rules are all about?
Sure. So every state has their own set of rules. But the basic idea is to set ethical standards for lawyers, outlining how they should conduct themselves with clients, the courts, and the public.
Okay.
And these rules cover a wide range of issues, from conflicts of interest to confidentiality to, as we see in this case, how fees should be handled.
So basically, they're the guidelines that ensure lawyers are playing by the rules and acting in the best interests of their clients.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And one of the most important rules, especially relevant to our case, is the requirement that contingency fee agreements be in writing and signed by the client at the very beginning of the representation.
Ah, so that's where Feingold really messed up.
Yeah.
He started working without any written agreement.
Yeah.
Which, of course, goes against those ethical guidelines. And if I remember correctly, he didn't even mention the fee until weeks later, which seems like a pretty shady way to operate.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The court specifically cited Rule 202, which states that contingency fee agreements shall be in writing. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And they also highlighted Rule 1.5, which requires lawyers to communicate the scope of the representation and the basis or rate of the fee, preferably in writing, before or within a reasonable time after commencing the representation.
So not only did Feingold fail to get a written agreement, but he also didn't communicate that fee up front, violating not one, but two key ethical rules.
Yeah.
That's a double whammy right there.
It certainly is. So the court essentially said that by jumping the gun and doing all this work without that clear agreement in place, Feingold assumed the risk that he might not get paid. They also pointed out that the 50% fee, while not explicitly prohibited, was certainly eyebrow-raising and contributed to the overall perception that he was acting unethically.
It's like the court is saying, look, we get it. You put in the work, but you didn't follow the rules, and that has consequences. Seems pretty straightforward to me. Was there any pushback from Feingold at all? Did he have any arguments to counter the court's findings?
Of course, Feingold had his own perspective, and this is where the case gets even more interesting. He argued that, sure, even though there was no formal contract, Puccello still benefited from his work, so it wouldn't be fair for him to walk away empty-handed.
Okay.
So he was still trying to lean on that unjust enrichment principle.
Okay, so even though he messed up procedurally, he's still trying to make the case that, hey, I deserve some compensation based on the work I did.
Right.
I'm curious to see how the court responded to that.
Well, the court didn't completely dismiss the idea of unjust enrichment, but they applied it very narrowly in this case.
Okay.
They basically said, yes, Feingold did some work, but Puccello explicitly rejected that work and hired someone else. So how can we say that he was unjustly enriched by services that he didn't ultimately accept or use?
Yeah, that makes sense. It's not just about whether someone potentially benefited, but whether they actually accepted and retained those benefits. So it sounds like the court was very careful not to create a situation where lawyers could just do work without an agreement and then demand payment later on.
Exactly. They wanted to prevent lawyers from essentially holding clients hostage.
Right.
You know, well, I did all this work, so now you have to pay me whether you agree to it or not.
Right, right. So Feingold's gamble backfired spectacularly. It's a pretty stark reminder that ethical rules aren't just suggestions. They have real-world consequences.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing this wasn't the end of the story, right?
Yeah.
There's got to be more to unpack here.
You're absolutely right. We haven't even touched on the concurring opinions, which add some really fascinating nuances to this already compelling case. Are you ready to delve into those?
Absolutely. Bring on the concurring opinions. I'm ready to see what other legal and ethical twists this case has in store.
Okay, so let's jump into those concurring opinions.
Okay.
Because they really highlight the complexity of this case.
Mm-hmm.
Judge Beck, for example, he raised a really interesting point.
Yeah.
He questioned whether some of the services Feingold claimed to have provided even qualified as, like, legal services at all.
Oh, now that's an interesting twist. So what exactly did Judge Beck take issue with?
Well, he specifically pointed to, you know, things like Feingold arranging a doctor's appointment for Puccello after the accident.
Okay.
And Judge Beck argued that, well, while this was certainly a helpful gesture, it's not necessarily something a client would reasonably expect to, you know, pay a lawyer for.
Right.
He even questioned whether, you know, securing that admission of liability from the other driver was truly a quantifiable benefit.
Right.
Since it hadn't yet been, you know, tested in court.
So it's like Judge Beck is drawing a line between actions that are directly related to legal representation.
Right.
Like drafting documents, researching case law,
mm-hmm.
versus like these more general acts of assistance or courtesy.
Exactly.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty tricky distinction to make.
Yeah.
Especially in a case like this where the lines are already so blurred.
You've hit the nail on the head. Judge Beck's opinion really forces us to grapple with, like, you know, where are the boundaries of, you know, what constitutes legal work? What falls outside that scope?
Right.
It raises these questions about what can clients reasonably expect from their lawyers,
mm-hmm.
what actions are truly beneficial to a case,
right.
and you know, how do we determine the value of those actions?
It's a fascinating perspective. It makes you wonder if Feingold had focused solely on those like core legal aspects of the case,
right?
Like gathering evidence, building a strong legal argument, you know, would the court have been more sympathetic to his quantum Meruit claim?
Mm.
Or is the lack of a written agreement combined with, you know, those ethical violations, is that just such a fundamental flaw that kind of overshadows everything else?
That's a tough question to answer definitively.
Yeah.
The court was clearly troubled by Feingold's disregard for those ethical rules and the potential for abuse if, you know, lawyers were allowed to just circumvent those rules and demand payment for services that weren't explicitly agreed upon. However, Judge Beck's opinion does suggest that, you know, the nature of the services provided and their direct relevance to the legal case could play a role in how quantum Meruit is applied.
Yeah, it's a reminder that even in these, you know, seemingly straightforward cases, there's often layers of complexity and differing interpretations.
Absolutely.
And it highlights the importance of not only understanding the law, but also being sensitive to those ethical considerations that, you know, guide legal practice.
Precisely. And beyond the legal implications, I think this case also offers, you know, some valuable lessons about clear communication and setting expectations in any professional relationship, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. It's easy to get caught up in the moment, especially when you're dealing with, you know, a stressful situation like a car accident.
Right.
But, you know, this case really underscores how crucial it is to, you know, just take a step back, make sure everyone's on the same page from the start, and yeah, get everything in writing.
Couldn't agree more. You know, whether you're hiring a lawyer, a contractor, even collaborating on a project, you know, those initial conversations about, you know, the scope, the expectations and fees can really prevent a world of headaches down the road, and it protects both parties involved.
Yeah, it's like the old adage, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Exactly.
A little bit of upfront communication can save everyone a lot of time, money, and stress in the long run. So as we wrap up our deep dive into Feingold v. Pucello, what are the key takeaways you hope our listeners walk away with?
Yeah.
What are those, you know, nuggets of wisdom that they can apply to their own legal practice or even their everyday lives?
I think, you know, the biggest takeaway, and this applies to everyone, not just lawyers, it's the importance of clear communication and documented agreements.
Okay.
Don't assume anything. Get those expectations out in the open right from the start. Put it in writing. Protects you, protects the other party, creates that foundation of transparency and trust.
That's a solid piece of advice. Any other pearls of wisdom you'd like to impart?
Well, I think this case also serves as a really powerful reminder that ethical rules matter.
They're not just, you know, abstract principles. They have real world consequences. And for lawyers, understanding and adhering to those rules is not just a matter of, you know, professional responsibility.
Right.
But it's essential for building a strong reputation and maintaining the integrity of the legal profession.
It's like the saying, character is what you do when no one is watching.
Exactly.
Ethical conduct is about doing the right thing, even when it's not easy or convenient.
Right.
And this case really demonstrates how crucial that is.
Exactly. And finally, Feingold v. Pucello reminds us that while quantum Meruit can be a valuable legal tool, it's not a free pass.
Right.
Courts will really scrutinize those claims carefully.
Yeah.
And they're unlikely to reward someone who acted unethically or disregarded those, you know, rules of professional conduct.
So it's not just about doing the work, it's about doing the work the right way, with transparency, integrity, and a commitment to ethical principles.
Beautifully put. And with that, I think we've covered a lot of ground today. We have. Feingold v. Pucello is a case that continues to resonate because it touches on so many fundamental aspects of legal practice.
Hmm.
You know, ethical conduct, client communication, the boundaries of professional services, the importance of clear agreements. It's a reminder that even in a field governed by, you know, rules and precedent, the human element is always present.
Right.
And our actions have consequences.
Absolutely. And I think it's a case that, you know, every lawyer, whether seasoned or just starting out, can learn from.
Well said.
Yeah.
So to our listeners, we hope you found this exploration of Feingold v. Pucello as insightful and thought-provoking as we did.
Yeah.
It's a case that sparks conversation, challenges assumptions, and ultimately reminds us that integrity and clear communication are the cornerstones of a successful and ethical legal practice.
For sure.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. It's kind of fascinating to think about how a case like this that originated, you know, back in the 70s might play out differently in today's, you know, digital world.
Yeah.
Imagine if Feingold had just, like, sent Pacello a quick text outlining his fees after that initial phone call, or if they had, like, exchanged a few emails confirming the terms of representation.
Right.
Could something as simple as a text message have, like, prevented this whole legal battle?
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah.
And it raises some really interesting questions about how technology is changing the way we approach, you know, legal agreements. Would a text message hold the same weight as a formal written contract? Could a series of emails establish a binding agreement? These are questions that, you know, courts are grappling with right now as we kind of navigate this evolving landscape of digital communication.
It's almost like we need, like, a digital age update to the classic advice of get it in writing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it should be get it in a text, an email, a DM, basically just make sure there's a digital record.
You're absolutely right. And it's not just about protecting yourself legally. It's also about promoting that clear communication and ensuring everyone's on the same page, you know, from the outset. A simple email or text outlining those key terms can prevent misunderstandings and potential conflicts down the road.
It's a win-win for both parties. So as we wrap up our deep dive into the fascinating and cautionary tale of Feingold v. Pacello,
yeah,
what's, like, one final takeaway you'd like our listeners to ponder? What's that, you know, lingering question that might spark a conversation at their next legal conference or networking event?
I think the question I leave our listeners with is this. How do we balance the need for clear, documented agreements with the human element of trust and good faith? It's easy to get caught up in, you know, the legalities and forget that relationships, you know, professional or personal, are built on a foundation of trust.
It's a delicate balancing act, for sure. You know, we want to protect ourselves legally, but we also don't want to approach every interaction with, like, suspicion or distrust.
Exactly. So how do we uphold that trust while also protecting ourselves from misunderstandings and potential conflicts? It's a question worth pondering. And, you know, Feingold v. Pacello provides a compelling case study in what can happen when that balance goes awry.
It's a conversation that's, you know, likely to continue as technology reshapes how we interact and do business.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground today. Feingold v. Pacello is a case that's full of valuable lessons for lawyers and anyone navigating, you know, the complexities of professional relationships.
I agree. It's a reminder that clear communication, ethical conduct, and a healthy respect for, you know, the rules of the game are essential for success in any field.
To our listeners, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into Feingold v. Pacello. We hope you found it informative, engaging, and maybe even a little bit entertaining. Remember, assumptions can be dangerous, communication is key, and whether it's a formal contract or a simple email, get those agreements in writing. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and keep those ethical compasses pointed in the right direction.